Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, everyone. I'm Ben Johnson, and this is the Perpetual Chess Podcast. On Perpetual Chess, I have weekly conversations with the chess world's best players, promoters, and educators about their lives, careers, current projects, and best practices. For more information, go to perpetualchesspod.com. I am here with Jan Gustafsson, German Grandmaster, and another friend of mine. Jan, among other things, is known as an opening expert in chess, or so I hear. And some people have called him the funniest person in Germany. No pressure, though, Jan. So
that's accurate, but it's not a big, like, yeah, endorsement, actually.
Damning with faint praise, we call it in the English. Although I know that you speak English better than I do.
No pressure at all. Like, I can't say, speak a single word already. You see, I'm looking for the easiest words in the language. I'm so nervous to be on your podcast. Thanks a lot for having me.
It's nerve-wracking for sure. So I thought we would start out by you talking about your youth. Tell us about schoolboy Jan Gustafsson, how you discovered chess, and when you started to realize you were pretty good at it.
Wow, this is like WTF with Mark Maron. It's an origin story. Timeless.
Lay down on the couch.
I am lying down, actually. So I was born in Hamburg, Germany. I have two siblings. When I was 6 years old, my parents, who are teachers, like, I don't know, took a bunch of sabbatical years, and we went on a journey on a sailing boat through the Mediterranean Sea. For your U.S. listeners, that's some big lake we have in Europe. And yeah, there's not that much to do on a sailing boat, so you can't play football or any of those things. So at some point, I believe I started playing chess with my dad when I was like 8 or 9, maybe. And then I got some Mephisto Mondial chess computer. Those are the old days before internet. I'm a very old man. It's the 80s.
Was that one of the ones where you actually put the guy down on the little touch board?
I think you had to press, like, I'm not very good at technology, but you had to press the squares and then it would recognize it with some magnetic magic.
Yes, I had one of those.
Right. So, yeah, I played with that and I got the occasional chess book. And then I think, well, I went to school in Spain for 2-3 years, but I didn't do much chess there. And when I came back to Hamburg, I was like 11 probably. And, yeah, joined the Hamburg Chess Club. And the rest, well, without trying to sound pretentious, but it is history, pretty much. Like,
so your first tournament was not till you were 11?
Yeah, I think that's right.
Wow, late bloomer for chess. I did not know that.
But I think I was already a decent, like, self-taught player when I was 11. Like, I was a top German player at age 13, I guess. But I think I was decent, but I didn't start playing till I was 11 because I read books and so on my boat.
Okay, and did you have a particular strength as a chess player before you became an opening world authority?
Well, my first chess book was, it was a German book, but it was called Kasparov's Chess Openings. So that might have influenced me. My very first chess book was an opening. So already as an 11-year-old, I considered myself an opening world authority.
So you memorized it and you were off to the races?
Yeah, I didn't have many other chess books. So yeah, I think I had that one more or less memorized after reading it 50 times.
Okay.
But yeah.
Okay, so you were...
I don't know if that was a big strength back then.
What was? Tactics? Positional? How did you play?
I have no idea. How do kids play? Like, you just try to beat the other kids, right? And
yeah, but at some point I feel like a style manifests itself. Certainly, like, around the candidate master level or something.
Maybe. One shameful anecdote is that in my first German kids' championship, I think it was under 12, I made 9 draws out of 11 games. Not very proud of it, but might as well.
Were you playing the Berlin?
No, I don't think it was because of my defensive style. It was more because of my chicken nature. I thought all the other kids must be world champions. It was like my second chess tournament. So I probably offered and accepted a lot of draws. I can't recall any of the games, but I do recall that.
And look at you now.
Still making draws, just against stronger players.
So you grew up and became a grandmaster at the age of 24, is that right?
That sounds very late too, right?
It does. I was surprised.
I feel like it should have been earlier.
In my hours of research, I was surprised to come across that as well. But I think that's what the internet says.
I'm surprised to hear that. It feels like it should have been earlier. But I do recall that I was a strong international master for a while, like at 2570 or whatnot, and kept not getting the title, but I wasn't aware it was that late. I would have said like 21, 22, but
okay.
I'm sure the internet's right on that.
Or my math is wrong.
No, I don't think so.
How hard were you working at chess those days?
Of course, the standard answer most grandmasters will give you, I never worked on chess in my life and so on. But generally, I had 2 years where I worked on chess seriously. The first was after I finished German high school. We call it gymnasium, but it's similar to high schools, when I was 18. Then I joined, believe it or not, the army for a year. But I mainly joined it to join something, I don't know, to translate the stuff, some sports department they have. So I was, yeah, mainly playing chess tournaments during that year and working on chess. Some training plan and all kinds of stuff, which is from 2400 to 2530, somewhere in that neighborhood.
I would not have pictured you in the army.
Yeah, I'm not sure I defended the country expertly, but I played a lot of chess. First time I came to New York, where I think I met you, I was in the army. That was on a NATO plane we took from, I forgot where, somewhere in Germany to Washington, and yeah, we had to wear our uniform. Then we went to play this GM tournament in the Marshall Chess Club. And whatever year that was, 98, somewhere in that neighborhood.
Sounds about when I met you. Were you forced
97 or 98, I played two of those. Yeah, I think 98.
You didn't have to join the army, did you? You know, us Americans are very ignorant of other cultures, so you have to forgive me the
No, I'm very question. Ignorant, too. I think in my days they changed it by now, and now I believe it's all voluntary. You know, I could be wrong. My days you normally had it. Choice between something we call civil services, like you go work in a home for elderly people or stuff like that for a year, or joining the army. Most of my friends would do the civil services, but the chess army thing was too good a deal for me to turn down, so I joined that one.
Sounds good to me. And then fast forwarding to your 20s, so you became one of the best players in Germany, and one question.
No, there's another stop. There's origin stories. Because I got this 2530, then I started studying. I studied at the university. I studied seriously for 2 years or 3 years. Then I was an exchange student in Madrid for another year. And as you do as an exchange student, I never really attended university, so I had a lot of free time. And I spent a lot of it studying chess. So I improved in that year from 2530 to 2600, pretty much the level I've had for the last 15 years. So those are the 2 years where I worked on chess much more than the other steps.
Okay. And did you feel like you hit a ceiling at 2600, or did you just phase out the study aspect of your chess career?
I think it's mainly laziness, but yeah, growing up for me, this is probably not very smart, but the goal for me was always to become a 2600 player. Like in the old days, that was the mark of a strong grandmaster, and that was the level that would get you into the national team in Germany. So somehow that was always the goal I had in the back of my mind. And then when I reached it, I realized you don't get a prize or anything, and life doesn't change. But I think I lost a bit of drive or mojo, and with my cautious nature, since then I've pretty much been maintaining these 2600s,
coasting
and not improving.
Well, it's quite
to get by.
Quite a feat for a fish like me. So I commend you nonetheless.
That means a lot.
So how did you spend your time in your 20s? Obviously, we crossed paths a few times. Did you ever have a real job?
How do you define a real job? I don't think I've ever had a real job. No, like. So, you know, where there were some card games in my 20s and, yeah, a bunch of chess and being signed up at the university for many years without going there that much. I don't know. I don't think I did anything useful through my 20s now looking back at them.
Good for you. A 20s well spent.
Yeah, I think so. Not improving at chess or any other aspect, education, social skills,
well,
nothing.
Pop culture for sure.
Pop culture, yeah. I stayed up to date through my 20s.
I know that there's, in addition to being the funniest person in Germany, for those who don't know, Jan is the biggest expert of American television shows, which we may get to, but I know that you cover this topic deeply on your Banter Blitz shows.
I cover this topic deeply anywhere, really. All my chess commentary is just an excuse to talk about the wonders of the night off, not the night off, but the night off, and Game of Thrones, but I'm behind on my TV viewing.
Yes.
Anyway, I feel like we shouldn't go down that road yet, so I'm not going to ask you about Westworld.
Okay. Well, speaking of being behind on your viewing, I would like to mention you became a father recently. Congratulations.
Thank you.
How's her chess playing coming along?
She's 2 months now, so they grow up so slow, don't they? Like, she still doesn't speak or walk. I'm a little disappointed.
The first few months are incredibly slow. As I mentioned to you via text.
Like, I'm lying to my girlfriend that I see all this progress, but I really don't. That's normal, right? You're an experienced father, so I shouldn't get nervous yet.
The first 6 months are kind of all a blur. My oldest didn't sleep. My youngest is 8 months, and she was easier. When they sleep, you tend to notice that they do more things. But is yours smiling yet?
Yeah, she's smiling at me. And she's trying to talk, actually. Like, I think she doesn't get the words quite right, but she's doing a bit more than eh-eh. And yeah, she's forming her own words and stuff, so it's quite entertaining.
Okay, and do you think that she will play chess someday? Have you thought about that?
I don't know. Like, truth is, I haven't read up on any education tactics. Like, I'm planning to consult our mutual friend Donnie and to guide me through everything, because I'm sure he's a big expert. On all aspects, but I haven't given anything any thought, really. Like, for now, I believe that she should choose to do whatever she wants to do. But I'll probably change and try to live my dreams through her when she's like 12 or something and force her to study chess for 8 hours a day.
That sounds like a good fatherhood to me.
Yeah,
speaking of Donnie, that would be Donnie Ariel, International Master, just to...
Name drop.
Yes, exactly. So now you're with Chess 24. Tell us,
right. And
in researching this, I found out that you're co-founder. I did not know that. So tell us about how you got involved.
I'm not sure either, but yeah, after I hit my 30s, I thought, okay, maybe it's time to get a job at some point. So yeah, I met the other co-founder and yeah, mentioned that I was interested in getting involved with a chess project and had some ideas, so that's how Chess24 kind of was born, and it's been up and running for, I don't know, time goes by so fast, 3 years now? I don't even know, really. I think I've been involved with the project for like 5 years now, and yeah, a lot of chess stuff on the site, doing a lot of live commentary, content, even though I don't like the word content. Do you like the word content? Feels offensive to content producers to me.
I'm okay with the word content, although it's certainly not the most specific word when it applies to chess educational materials.
Now, to me, it sounds like the suits, I'm also a suit, but they invented their word to make it sound less important. If you're a creative guy and you have your own podcast, it's just content. I don't like that word. But I don't have another one either.
Okay, well, we'll work on that. So with Chess24, you guys do a lot of broadcasting, do a lot of educational material. I enjoy your recaps when there's big tournaments going on. Are you involved in the business development side as well, or do you just stick to chess stuff?
I don't know. I'm trying to stick to chess stuff because I feel like at least I have some clue what I'm talking about. But yeah, there's always, as in any startup, I would imagine, but it's the first one I'm really involved in. As always, everyone does a bit of everything, and of course there's meetings, and we should do this, and we should do that, and we should talk to that guy, and of course I have a bit of a network in the chess world. So it's always a bit of a mix, but yeah. I always tell people that I am a pretty horrible manager, but I'm pretty decent at this chess stuff, so it probably makes sense if I focus on that.
I can't comment
on
that.
For you recruiters out there, I'm joking. I'm a fantastic manager.
He is good on chess, I can tell you that much.
That too.
So do you do individual lessons as well, or do you just stay in your Chess24 fiefdom for your chess work?
I don't know, actually. Like, I have one student now. The main thing is, might sound weird, but I don't have much time between the Chess24 and, yeah, sometimes I have some outside activities. I still play a bit of chess myself. There's not much time, but which is another way of saying, if someone makes me an offer I can't refuse, I'll do it for sure.
You mentioned you're playing chess. How often do you play these days in tournaments?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just mentioned it as a reason why I'm so busy. It's not true at all. I only play the Thailand Open every year, which is a very nice home for my Baden-Baden team. I would like to play a little more, but it's hard to find nice tournaments. So if you hear of any nice tournament, mainly a holiday location, that is willing to give me, ideally, lots of money, but that's not that much of a priority.
Do you get
showing up and making lots of draws?
Do you get appearance fees?
Not really. I believe I'm really not a playing professional anymore, so I'm not that much in tune with these things. But I believe the time of appearance fees for guys my strength, but in general for grandmasters, are a bit over. And nowadays, yeah, it's brutal out there. You got to win tournaments.
Yeah, that's one of the things. One of the goals of this podcast is to get a little more of a glimpse behind the curtain of what happens with grandmasters, your level, and the handful of players who are even better than you. So you do think there used to be appearance fees?
Well, I do know that, but it's a long time ago. Like when I first started playing chess 15, 20 years ago as a grandmaster, you could do decently well by going from tournament to tournament. You would get your fees, or at least you would get a hotel and full board and travel expenses and so on. But I think, as I said, I'm only playing the Thailand Open, so I really don't know. But I think these days are mainly gone, and it's very hard to get appearance fees. Pretty much anywhere for a player on my level.
It's funny because I think overall the health of the chess economy seems better to me than 15 years ago. Do you think that's true or no?
Yeah, I don't think that necessarily contradicts each other. It's just, yeah, that there's more tournaments and in a way it's more democratic. Or you US guys with your winner takes it all mentality have changed things that, yeah, it's not so much about you get your appearance fee and you can relax. But yeah, in tournaments, you got to win a prize to do well, which is a very tough lifestyle for, I've never played a lot of open tournaments, but for the traveling GM out there, because you do the math, like first prize in your regular tournament is whatever, 2,000 euro, takes 10 days, there's 20 grandmasters playing, so hard to make a lot of money with those.
Yeah, it seems quite difficult. Luckily, there are other opportunities, such as commentating on Chess24.
That's the basket I'm putting on my accent.
And one other thing about you being busy, I would just like to remind our listeners, you do have a 2-month-old. So from now on, Jan, that's your excuse.
I've been using her as an excuse for doing nothing over the last 2 months, pretty much exclusively. I'm not sure how long I can pull that card. Like 2 years old, still valid, right?
Yes, for sure. And if you were to ever have another child, I think you don't even have to wait for the kid to be born.
Yes, just keep producing kids and then saying, yeah, I'm busy, I got an infant at home.
Exactly.
Got it.
So you've also worked as a second in my hours of research, I discovered. Can you, those of us who are never going to be good enough to be anyone's second, or whose judgment you would have to question if they selected you as a second, could you tell us what that's like?
I think it depends on the nature of whom you're working for and where you're working for them and so on. In general, a second...
You should probably define it first, just in case anyone doesn't know.
That's what I was trying to do. I'm not sure if you can call it a coach or a trainer. To my mind, a second is quite specifically somebody who works for a top player at a tournament. Like, this is my second for this tournament. But, of course, it often happens that people have seconds they use for multiple tournaments. So it basically means an opening specialist that helps you with your openings, oftentimes overnight. Like, a typical working day would be, let's say, your boss finishes his game at, I don't know, 8 p.m. Then you go for dinner. Then it's, let's say, 10. You let him rest for an hour. Then at 11 p.m., you get your briefing. Tomorrow I'm playing that guy. I would like you to check if there's any idea in this Nidorf, or he could play the Petrov. What do we do there? And then the boss goes to sleep. Well, typically, I like to work at night. Not everybody does it that way. Then you work at night for as long as you can, a couple hours normally. And then in the morning, you show the results to your boss. And then sometimes there's some more tasks, or sometimes it's all right. So, yeah, it's interesting work, especially for ambitious young chess players, because you get a lot of opening insights and you get to learn a lot about how the top players work and operate. But it's also, it's tough. I mean, you normally have irregular sleeping schedules and have to find sleep while the boss is playing, because you're working at night and so on. But yeah, I enjoyed it for whiles, but I'm not tough enough to do it full-time, I believe.
So what did you learn about how the top players operate?
It's a lot of work, and they're quite good at it. that's the main insight I got. But it's very different. Like, some guys, yeah, they go to incredible depths, and some guys are much more relaxed about it, or more, let's say, okay, I prepared everything at this training camp, so I don't need to do that much at the tournament. So everybody's really, really different. But they're all very good. I understand. I'm not telling any tales out of school here. That's pretty much what you learn to appreciate, like how much insight they really have. For me, as a 2600 guy, the distance to how much these 2750 guys know, it's quite impressively big.
So would you say, is there one aspect of chess where you feel like the gap is larger between a player of your caliber and a top 10 player?
Well, I feel it's smallest in openings, which is probably natural since I've been a second and consider myself an opening specialist, so that's where I know most. But everywhere else, it's big, like insight, psychology, fighting spirit, tenacity, calculation, endgame knowledge, like you name it, any area there. Spectacularly better.
It's interesting that the first few factors you named were what we would call soft factors, not actual chess skills, but application skills like psychology and decision making and clock management. Do you think that those are underrated as skills for elite players?
Not sure if they're underrated. I would guess they're properly rated, especially since we have a world champion in Magnus Carlsen, who, lives these skills like physical fitness and fighting spirit and mental toughness, tenacity and all that stuff. Normally the world champion sets the trend a bit. But maybe it's come more to the forefront with this new generation of fighters and tough guys. Well, the generation before, I'm not sure. I don't think. It's not meant as an insult, but I consider them more like scientists and researchers like these guys. Anand, Kramnik, Leko, and so on. I feel it's slightly different generation in this. Yeah, the soft factors have become more of a focus over the last 10 years, maybe. I could be wrong about it, but that's how I felt.
You know these players better than I do, but Carlsen strikes me as a bit of a hybrid between the two because he doesn't have as much hyper-specialization in openings, but he does have sort of the technical skill of the players you mentioned.
For sure, yeah.
So who do you think, as we record this, the World Championship is about to start, so we're not going to handicap that matchup too much because by the time this comes out, it may well be over. But I would like to ask you, who do you see on the horizon as potential world champions to succeed Magnus should he hold his title this time around?
Hard to say, really. Like, Magnus is the dominating player of this generation, so it's very hard to say if one of the guys out of this generation can challenge him. Kayaki now or Caruana, to me, always felt like he's number two of the current generation and the guy closest to Magnus when it comes to both toughness, fighting skill, and also pure chess strength and the results against each other. So I always thought out of the current generation, Caruana is closest, but he also would not be a favorite against Magnus in a match. And then, who knows, it could be that it's some Indian or Chinese guy or wherever he's from that we don't know yet, or that's not a household name yet. If Carlsen manages to stick around for 10 years, like, very possible. We haven't heard of the next world champion.
Yeah, there's no end in sight currently in his reign, although this could look foolish by the time it's released. We'll see. So getting back to your opening expertise, what differentiates you from other grandmasters? Do you just have a better memory, or do you think you just work harder? How did you get this designation, the OWA title of opening world authority?
I'm not sure if that's an official title, but I think it's just areas where you're interested in. You could argue that I'm not as well-rounded. Like, I'm a reasonably lousy endgame player for a player of my level, mainly because I haven't spent much time studying endgames. But I was always very interested in getting that small opening advantage or whatever, neutralizing that line with black and so on. While I wasn't that interested once I got that small opening advantage and how to convert it. So I think it's just, what you decide to spend your time on. And for whatever reason, I was always very drawn to this scientific part of trying to get an opening advantage or equalizing in the opening.
Now that you're old and have a child, so you're extremely busy, are you still keeping up with openings to the extent you did in your youth?
Probably less so. Like, I'm still interested in it since I'm doing a lot of commentary. At least I'm keeping up to the level that I like to think I know what I'm talking about when I'm talking about these top players' games. But it's not, as you mentioned, there's just not as many hours in the day when you go to work and have a child and all that stuff to take care of. So, less so. But I'm still a hobby, like openings, not chess.
Okay, and I read about, you did some work with our first guest, Greg Shahadi, runs the U.S. Chess School, and I know that you were an esteemed instructor there recently. And in reading the recap of it, it said that you helped kids figure out how to use chess base to prep their openings. Without chess base in front of us, could you describe a little bit what sort of advice you gave?
I'm not sure if it was chess base advice. It was more, it was actually a nice event, a class of, what do you call it, this U.S. chess school, some of the strongest players, young players in the country, featuring world champion Jeffrey Zhang, but also a bunch of other very strong other players. And we pretty much went through their openings one by one. I had a look beforehand at what they were doing and gave my not always very valuable insights in what I think they could do better and where there's holes in their repertoire. And I enjoyed it. I'm not sure they learned anything, but it was fun to see. And a lot of very, very strong young players in the U.S., who would have thought.
Good to hear. Well, if I'm not mistaken, that happened before Jeffrey Zhang won the World Youth Championship. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'd hate to take all the credit, but like 98% of the credit.
I was going to say, draw your own conclusion about why that happened.
You do the math.
Exactly. So I'm sure people who are listening, a lot of them are interested in how to improve in chess generally. And obviously that's a tough question to answer because everyone has unique circumstances. So why don't we start by you saying you have a talented young kid, maybe not the most talented kid in the world, but a kid who loves chess and wants to get better. What advice do you give them? I'm sure you've been asked this many times. So what's your stock answer?
Yeah, the problem is you never have a good answer for these things, right? Like, it is the most asked question to probably any chess authority. I have rating Y and have HX, and I would like to get to that rating with that amount of study. And I don't have an answer. Like, I think everyone's circumstances are unique, as you mentioned. What I do believe, and I'm not sure this is going to help anybody, is that especially with a young kid, no chess input is really harmful. If they like chess and they read books and whatever, watch opening videos, watch my brilliant shows, play online, I think we don't know how our brain works anyway. Just get as much input as you can. There is not really any bad input, and let your subconscious or whoever does that stuff in the brain figure it out for you. So I'm not a believer in a formula or you should spend X amount of time on openings, X on end games, X on solving studies or practice. I don't believe that stuff exists. Just do whatever you like, and if you like chess, you'll improve.
If only it were so simple. What about old men like me who...
Condescending!
It must be nice to be a grandmaster, that's all I'm saying. I can't imagine what that's like.
You gotta put in the time, right? Even lazy me, like, I do believe in, what do they call it, this 10,000-hour rule. I'm sure I spent a lot of time on this chess, but I honestly don't believe that there is this structured learning path to, become very good.
Although I do remember getting in a bit of an argument with you many years ago where you had just read this book, Talent is Overrated.
That's the only book I read on the topic, so I still firmly believe in it.
Okay, so you've seen nothing to dissuade you that talent is
nothing
overrated?
Nothing at all.
Okay, yeah, that's a tough call, and I'm not... I like to read about that stuff, but I'm not an expert either. You certainly, as a chess teacher, I see kids of varying skill levels, but it's hard to control for the variables of how they would actually turn out 10 years later, given an equal amount of work, which is...
Yeah, I also don't really know. I like this nature versus nurture discussion, and this talent is overrated. What do they call it? Deliberate practice?
Yes.
It's easy to say, but it's got to be the right practice, and what that is. So individual that I really don't have a clue. That's why I give this very broad answer, which I also believe in. Just, do whatever you like. If you're interested, you will improve.
Okay, I'll let you slide on that answer then. So moving on to what the people really want, Jan, let's get your pop culture opinions. What is your favorite TV show of all time?
Wow, I just read a book, because the only books I read are about TV. I believe it's called TV the Book, that is pondering that very question to great lengths. And they were discussing in the finals. They had The Wire versus The Sopranos. The Wire, or is that even true? Maybe The Simpsons won. I think The Simpsons won, and then it was The Wire versus The Sopranos for the second spot. I don't know. My fake intellectual answer would be The Wire. You got to say The Wire, right?
That's certainly the accepted answer in a certain American group of people. Demographic that I basically belong to, and I share that opinion, although I seem to remember you had some trouble getting into The Wire.
I still I'll give that answer to look smart, but when I look back at how much I suffered sitting through season 2 of The Wire and how much I enjoy nonsense like The Shield or whatever, I'm not really sure that The Wire is such a great show, because it should be enjoyable, right?
Wow, this podcast is going to make headlines now.
Yeah, I'm not saying The Shield is the greatest TV show of all time, but I struggle a bit with labeling The Wire as so great when you have to sit through all this sport stuff in season 2.
Yeah, even
The Wire season 3 and 4 is pretty much unmatched.
Yeah, and even with subtitles, Americans sometimes have trouble understanding the dialogue in The Wire, so although...
Speak for yourself. I didn't ever
I was going to say, although you are an expert on English, that may have made it a challenge. What other languages do you speak, by the way?
That's pretty much it. No, I speak Spanish because I went to school there, so nothing to brag about. Bit of Dutch. Still no Norwegian, in spite of Norwegian girlfriend and daughter, so not that many, actually. No.
Are you still living in Hamburg?
Yeah, just bought a house, settling down.
Now, is it true or false?
Suburban dad.
Is it true? Oh, you're in the suburbs?
Yeah.
It's hard to believe. Not as hard to believe as the dad part, but hard to believe nonetheless.
Right.
You lived in Gibraltar for a bit, correct?
That's true.
How was that?
Okay, it's a small place, fantastic weather, so that's nice. And yeah, in Spain there's a lot of stuff if you're outside of Gibraltar. But I'm a big city kid, so I struggle with being in the suburbs, and Gibraltar, yeah, I don't want to trash it, it's nice, but it's a small place, like 20,000 inhabitants, so yeah, it's different.
And what brought you back to Hamburg?
I don't know, I think mainly the big city stuff, and yeah. I am from Hamburg, my family is from there, blah, blah, blah. It's more central for traveling and so on, so it's, in a way, more convenient for me. But I enjoyed the Gibraltar as well, because the weather in Hamburg, not so pleasant. Where are you based these days? You're in Pittsburgh or something?
I'm in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
No offense to all your Pittsburgh listeners. I've never been there.
Legions of Pittsburgh listeners. Yeah, it's a change from New York. It's a bit of a slower pace, but like you, I have kids now, and it's a little bit, you know, it's nice not to live in a fourth floor walk-up when you have two kids who somehow have mountains of stuff.
So you're suburban as well? House and garden, all the good stuff?
Well, we live in what they call the city here, but it's suburban by my standards. Compared to New York, we do have a bit of a yard, and the houses aren't connected, so I find it very confusing.
Beautiful.
But I'm adjusting, slowly but surely.
All of this is very new to me, so I'll hit you up for lots of advice on.
Well, once again, with any parenting questions, Donnie Ariel is the main authority.
Absolutely.
But I do have a direct link to him, so as do you. Okay, so you're still in your one last pop culture topic. You, like I, grew up in the 90s, and you were a fan.
Did we firmly establish that what's the best TV show in the end? I forgot. I got distracted.
Well, you kind of copped out by giving the company line of The Wire without striking firmly on what your true beliefs are. So I've kind of felt like it was a dead end.
Maybe you have a point, yeah. Is it too early to say Game of Thrones is the best show ever? I really enjoy Game of Thrones.
I can't do fantasy. I just can't.
Can't do it? Wow.
Yeah, I'm grounded in reality, unfortunately, for better or for worse.
But I know
that a lot of people love it. So don't stop listening, loyal Game of Thrones fans.
All right, moving on.
Okay,
90s.
Last topic: music. You've probably heard the saying, fathers, when they have kids, their wardrobe never changes again. They just keep wearing what they were wearing when they have kids, which 3 years in, I can tell you is true. And basically the same seems to be true of music. Are you still actively looking for, I know you and I both like some rap, and I don't know if you're into other things as well, but do you manage to look for new music, or are you too busy being the actual entertainer on Chess24?
I've never been very good with music, and I feel like it's more like whatever you listen to from, let's say, 14 to 18, it just sticks with you. So I've given up on that topic long time ago. Like, once in a while I try to reinvent myself and start thinking, okay, 90s hip-hop is maybe not the most grown-up music taste to have, and I listen to whatever, I can't even remember the names of these alternative rock bands you're supposed to listen to at that very moment. I think they sound all the same. I don't know if this is Snow Patrol or Arctic Monkeys or whatever they're called. And I go back to listening to Tribe Called Quest. So I don't know. I don't really have a new music taste, and I'm not staying up to date at all. Sometimes I listen to a new Drake album and I think, wow, these crazy kids nowadays, they're half singing, half rapping, and that's the thing. Like, I don't get it.
Yeah, although Tribe Called Quest does have a new album coming out, apparently, despite one of their members being deceased. So dads like us are rejoicing.
I wasn't even aware of that. So
yeah,
not,
I'm sure your Chess24 viewers are eager to hear your review. They're also on Saturday Night Live next week, which will be probably in the past by the time people hear this. But so yeah, keep your eyes out. Keep your eyes out while you're giving your baby a bottle. You can watch that.
I might, but yeah. Feels like I'm already way out of touch with U.S. pop culture, which really, as a German, I feel is my duty to stay informed about, but I'm not. Speaking of topics that will be long past when this show is out, tonight is election night So
yes.
I'm going to stay up all night and follow your elections. Are you doing the same thing?
I wanted to thank you, first of all, for allowing me to unplug for an hour of this, the longest day in human history. at least for those of us in the United States. Yeah, I'll be following the results. I think that, similar to the Magnus Carlsen match, I think the favorite is, I don't think there'll be any surprises, but it's always a nervous day in the meantime.
Right. Yeah, I don't think you want this podcast to get political, because I know you're a big subscriber to Michael Jordan. Republicans buy sneakers too.
Exactly.
So no need to give opinions on either side. We'll follow it.
Yes, exactly. So the last thing I want to touch on is you're following the great Greg Shahady as a guest on this podcast, and as you can imagine, he had a few more rants than you have when I had him as a guest. Does that surprise you?
No, I think he has opinions on stuff. Well, I don't really care about anything like this. What is the best TV show ever is one of the topics I'm most concerned with, but like reforming anything, I don't know. I don't feel the pressure to be a productive member of society as strongly, I think, is my problem. No, I'm not surprised by that.
He is a very productive member, so you don't have any opinions about the tiebreak stuff or the speed chess, like the speed of the games in elite tournaments?
Okay, let's go through his rants one by one then. So the tiebreak stuff is what, the Olympiad?
The Olympiad was a good example. So was the candidates that determined.
I don't know. In a perfect world, I'd like to have the Olympiad end with like a knockout tournament thing, like you do with your major sports. But you also don't want to send everybody home once they're out, right? So you would have to figure that one out. But yeah, I agree. It shouldn't be so complicated, ideally.
Okay. Faster time controls generally, are you in favor or opposed? I know you've called Greg a park player in the past, so that may impact your view versus his.
Not sure. Like, I think this one's again a cop out answer, but I think all the formats do have a right to exist. Like, as a live spectator, I quite enjoy watching a blitz or rep tournament, and yeah, it's fast paced and there's action for 2-3 hours. And I'm sure for all our great TV ambitions, this is a good plan. But then, as a student of the game, I never play through any blitz games, but I have played through many world championship matches or super tournaments from the past. So I feel like these games do have a longevity, the classical games, that separate them from the fast action of a live blitz or rapid tournament. I don't see why these formats have to compete, why we only have to play blitz chess. So, yeah, I understand it's a cop-out, and I'm sure Greg has many thought-out points. Well, I've really never given the topic any thought, but I'm happy with the current state of events. Just let them have whatever they want.
Okay, a welcome contrast to Greg's opinions. Although I think the world could use some change. The chess world could use some change, but I know that you're...
No, that didn't mean I'm happy with the current state of events on everything, but like the time control, the biggest problem to my mind is that it changes at every event, even with the classical. Like, that's very annoying from a player's perspective that you never know what the time control is. But if we have like 3 established time controls and you have tournaments in every format, like, I don't mind.
Yeah, I think uniformity would be better, and I think more faster would be better. Although I agree with you, you don't have to choose one. You can just have, say, 3 standard formats or something like that: blitz, some sort of action format, and some sort of slow format that's not quite as slow as currently. Now that we both
have... Yeah, I'm not sure. Don't you think these times of ours are too fast-paced? All these 30-second videos to grab our attention? That we need a contrast, like a nice 6-hour chess game, to make us focus on one topic for a long time again? I think it could be very educational.
It's a nice idea, but it just doesn't seem to work. Like, for example, when I'm watching the game, the broadcasts that you and others do such a good job on, I can't not look at the computer, for example.
You're supposed to look at the computer. Just watch me for 6 hours straight. That's what we want people to do.
Okay, that I can handle.
See?
All right. Well, unless you have anything else you want to talk about, I'm sure that you have diapers to change and you're a busy man. So we'll save the NBA talk for some other time.
Yeah. It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me. And apologies for not having any controversial opinions on anything, really.
Okay, well, you can write them up for next time. People can find
I'll
you
prepare.
On Twitter if anyone has positive feedback they would like to give you. Do you have anywhere else you'd like them to find you? Chess24, I guess.
Yeah, chess24.com. I do a lot of commentary there. Twitter, what am I called on Twitter? GM Jan Gustafsson, I believe.
Not maximizing you're not maximizing your potential on Twitter, I will say.
By never tweeting?
Yes, exactly.
Okay, I'll work on that. Thanks for having me.
All right, thanks for coming on, Jan.
Thanks for listening to Perpetual Chess. To hear more episodes, give feedback, or suggest guests, go to perpetualchesspod.com. If you like the show, please help me out by telling your friends and giving me a high rating on iTunes. I'll be back next week with another episode of the Perpetual Chess Podcast.
Podcast Network.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.